Yeah, Mike does eat a lot of cheese, so he probably has a hard time.
He's kind of like Charlie from It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, he is.
Man, I'm kind of hooked on pimento cheese right now. There's this stuff at Walmart called, like, palmetto cheese, and it's like the southern pimento cheese.
Dude, palmetto cheese is
so
shit.
It's so ballin', man.
It's like South Carolina cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so good.
It's way better than any normal pimento cheese ever.
Yeah, it's like super pimento cheese. It's for superpowers. God damn, is it... Put that shit on some Ritz crackers.
Yeah, put it on anything.
So I think I'm so hooked on pimento cheese, I need to figure out how to make it so I can make my own.
I think it's pretty easy.
I think it's shredded cheese, and I'm pretty sure you have to add cream cheese to it. That's how you get the texture. And then pimentos are tiny, spicy, like, red peppers. So, yeah. Okay. Hey, hello, guys, and welcome to the Killbox, episode 15. I'm Matt, and I play Kador.
I'm Tom, and I play Minoth.
I'm Alex, and I am currently playing Minions.
Mike, and I play Signar and Trolls.
And it's Cock.
Yeah!
Andy is a troll in real life.
So, anyway, we got some, we'll go ahead and do our, events here coming up. Here in sunny Asheville, North Carolina, on, January 11th, we have a 50.2-list steamroller. So that should be a good little tournament. Hopefully we get some good turnout. And also on February 1st, we'll be having a one list optional tournament, two list, you know, we can do two lists or one list, you know, whatever. 35-point steamroller at Dwayne's World in, Kingsport, Tennessee. So, any of our Tennessee fans want to hit up some War Machine tournaments. I know you guys don't get a ton unless you live around Murfreesboro. So please come to our tournaments. Also on December 17th, if this podcast is released, we also have a tournament in Israel as well. So, Tom, how do you like this?
Jesus.
I'm dying.
My wife poured me a beer and it went way over full. Sorry. I mean, she's awesome for pouring me a beer, but damn, I'm trying to suck the foam. Don't giggle at me.
How do you like it? How do you like Oklahoma and how's your new meta? Any shout out to give?
Well, the really only place to play War Machine in this area nowadays is Top Deck Games. It's awesome. The owners are incredibly friendly and supportive of the War Machine Warmo Hordes group out here. It's an older meta, and they're highly competitive. Well, actually, there's an even split between highly competitive people and just kind of casual players, and it's incredibly fun, really just fun to hang out there. Sometimes I don't even play. I just bullshit with people for hours. So I'm enjoying it. Still miss North Carolina, but making the best of it.
Cool. So, like I said, any player shout-outs you want to do? You want to say hello to some people? You know, we need to get some of your players maybe on the cast, too. That'd be kind of interesting.
That'd be fun. Unfortunately, I don't remember names very well. So, hi, everybody I don't remember.
Aww, that's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I can see their faces really well. I just don't remember their name.
So, have you done any tournaments or anything like that? Huh?
Most of the tournaments actually have been them traveling to other states, either Texas or I think there's been a couple in Arkansas. And of course, cool. They went to Gen Con and all that.
Interesting. Cool. So, you guys just want to dive on into our first topic today? Or do you want to do some, I guess we can do some campaign mode discussion real quick, actually, before we hit our first topic today. So, as you guys know, we've been talking about some campaign ideas over the last few weeks, and let's just continue that. So, let's move on to, like, how we should move in the game, okay? So, generally speaking, in Warhammer Fantasy Battles, when you move, you roll, like, a 2d6, and that's kind of plus, you know, a number, and then that's how many moves you get per week. And then you can also use those moves to, like, build either reinforcements or, like, build, like, a, like, let's say in War Machine world, like, build, like, a Warjack factory or something of that nature. So, any ideas there?
Yeah. I got one idea. Let's make, the Mountain King Mat 6.
Okay, this isn't even the correct discussion. this isn't, you're just bitching. You need to go back to the troll forums. Yeah, we're thinking of doing, like, maybe a map that you would have three different lists that would revolve around a map, and you would play for, like, say, like, between 3 and 6 weeks. Then the person with the most, you know, map coverage at the end of those 3 to 6 weeks would win the game.
I know it's good as, like, Risk almost, where you move your army around. And start it, I would say start it with three lists, but journeyman size and journeyman rules where you can grow it. Maybe a little bit more faster than that, but that'll give people more realistic too as the fronts are moving around, you're reinforcing with troops, moving troops around. You spend one turn all of a sudden going from a 25-point list to a 50-point list because you consolidated two armies together. Things like that could be really interesting.
That sounds very interesting. Then you could get some, like, two caster fights going on too.
Exactly. Oh, and there's also a tiered, if you are 2 versus 1, you're fighting off two armies, you can get dramatically increased points if you win, and you also get increased points, like you get like 1 point usually for a loss, you get like 3 points for a loss if you fight, you know, a drastically outnumbered type thing.
Hmm. That sounds pretty interesting. Maybe that's a good idea too. Yeah, we're gonna have to just sit down and basically just make a rule set and just see how we go, but we're just kind of brainstorming in this little section too. Also, any of our listeners, please help us out. We had a great idea from a listener about, an IKRPG like Solo that you could use. Like you would build a Solo basically in the IKRPG book, and then you could use that Solo in one of your armies free of charge.
Or if they can kind of start moving around the battlefield and they act as a Solo, but if they die, they're gone. If they survive, you start adding experience points to them, and they can just become insanely overpowered. But then if he dies, he's dead.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of the idea there, and that's pretty interesting.
I like it.
I like that, too. So we also brought up the idea of... last week about secret lists, sort of. Like you, like your three armies would be secret until two armies would collide, then you reveal the lists to all players. Mm-hmm. And, we had some callback about that, like some flack about it, like, half of us liked it, half of us didn't. What about you, Tom? What do you think?
I think it'd be really interesting, even up until deployment, you don't know what the other person is bringing unless you've fought them previously. Or an ally has fought them previously. Basically, intelligence reveals what there is, because that shows the fog of war, so to speak. I mean, you don't know who's marching where unless you have intelligence.
Yeah. From a fluff standpoint, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I agree with it.
And I also want to talk a little bit about resource, like, growth. Because I know I want to have a resource... Probably we can just make an easy generic resource such as like gold or something like that. And then you use that gold everybody starts with a certain amount of gold at the start of the game before you make lists so you can buy mercenary contracts. And then every turn you can spend that gold to either, make like, you know, encampments or a castle or something like that. Or you could try to steal someone's mercenary contract. If their mercenary unit has died, since now they're back onto the bench, you can try to rebuy them.
Or you could have silent auctions with a third party and buy out someone's contract from underneath them.
Well, fluff-wise, when you sign a contract with a country, there's a cooldown period.
Oh, okay.
So, in fluff-wise, that really wouldn't work, but it's a good game mechanic. So, I think it would work after maybe their contract is expired. So, I'm thinking after that unit died.
That would be a good... Yeah, they sit out a week and then they're up for auction again.
Up for auction again, yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Any other thoughts there, guys?
I mean, this is definitely something that should be pursued, because I could see either Privateer Press pursuing it, or it just kind of becomes a crowdsourced rule book that would be a fun little league, so to speak. You can make it to a journeyman league, but just right. A more interesting one.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to do, is, like, you know, not everyone wants to play 50-point steamrollers all the frickin' time. Some people just want to have a little fun with their War Machine, and right now there's no way to play the game fluffy-wise except for the no-quarter, like, those single-shot missions or something like that they produce in no-quarter.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's a good idea.
I can play test it out here in Oklahoma, too, with my crowdsource, and then we could even get to the point that there's a online map that people are fighting over different parts of the Iron Kingdoms.
Yeah, that would be very neat. Yeah, I think the best way to start it is to start small, run like a little 3-week campaign, and then add rules to that as we go along.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea. All right, so that will be, we'll be playtesting that coming soon after we write some rules up for it, and we'll be... Yeah, we'll get us a map. We'll get us a really easy, simple map first. We'll just use, like, a hex map, and then we'll go from there. Yeah.
You can just overlay it over, like, blown-up sections of the actual map.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we was thinking, like, you could take, like, Gnarls and make a map of Gnarls, put, like, certain different terrain pieces onto it, too. Like, this is a dense forested area. Like, everything has concealment this game. You know, this is a plains. Nothing's different. Stuff like that. Swamp, you know, forests are considered, you know, water terrain pieces, including, you know, as well as forests. Stuff like that.
Yes, lots of swamps, please.
So, speaking of things that's good for the game, is list stagnation good for the game? I say no, because it's terrible for the game.
Maybe we should expand on what we're thinking with this.
Okay, what list stagnation is what I'm trying to talk about. It's kind of a magic term, sort of. It's when that you only use, when the majority of players only use one type of deck or one type of list to play all of their tournament games. Such things as E-Vlad right now is really only being used in his tier list, which I find is kind of lame. P. Grimm is only used with Runes of War.
Doomshaper, not Grimm.
Doomshaper. And Borka, you only really see him with Family Reunion. Is the game that's forcing these lists to be, you know, kind of pigeonholed into one way to be, these casters only being able to be played one way because that's the, you know, quote-unquote right way to play that caster. Is that a good thing? Or should we be, or should people be experimenting with those casters more?
I think there's a subconscious, everyone wants to win. No one goes and puts their miniatures on the table saying, oh, I just want to lose today. So if someone posts in the forum saying, hey, look, this Grimm list is doing amazing, I'm going to, of course, copy it, or the Raven list, or whatever list is very successful, I'm going to copy it. So until I think someone figures out some weird little way of putting things together, it's going to be, that's the kind of go-to, so to speak.
Yeah, I think a lot of people take these quote-unquote net deck lists and maybe change out, like, one unit or, you know, one solo or one beast or one jack to their own liking, and that makes it a little bit more to their playstyle, but it's still a very good way to play a certain list with the caster.
sorry, zoned out there for a second. well, the thing is like, when you see all these, net decked, or, you know, like, all these really popular lists that everyone tends to gravitate towards, is that Privateer Press has this really good thing of imperfect game balance, where that these, these top casters all have power that people just don't see. And then when, you know, like, take E. Haley versus, like, E. Sevi or High Reclaimer, that, you know, it's nobody sees them played a lot, but they're really good counters to that list, so everyone gravitates kind of towards these big power builds, and then it forces other people to go and find these little what would be considered middle tier or lower tier casters and bring those lists, and then it upends itself and it kind of shakes up the meta again. But I mean, with trolls as far as like Doomshaper and Borka, yeah, they're really good, but trolls have such an amazing stable of casters is that most trolls that go to like these big tournaments have one of those in their stable, but they also have, you know, P Grizzly, E Madric, I'm starting to see a little bit of E Doomshaper, which is pretty awesome. He's got some bad matchups though, but he's a wonderful caster, and you know, P Madric, and shit, even fucking Flanzer took Gunborn to the Masters or whatever tournament it was. But yeah, I mean, you get these big power casters, and then it just takes somebody a little bit of time to realize that, oh wow, this caster that's never played before has a really good matchup with him. So, yeah.
Speaking of Flanzer, when it comes to tournament players, a lot of lists that are derived from tournaments seem to be played over and over and over and over, such as like the Evel list from the Evel list, stuff like that. Is that really good that a lot of the smaller player base are refusing to experiment with their other casters because they find this one really, really good tournament list that really, really works? Because Evel can be played in many, many different ways, but she seems to only be played that one, you know, way there. And it takes, like, the big tournament players to change up the meta themselves. And really what they're doing, especially when it comes to War Machine Weekend this time, it seems that the Vlad list that won with the Assault Commandos and stuff, he wasn't changing the meta. He was actually metagaming against the people he was going to be playing against. So he really didn't do anything for, you know, Kador actually. He was just playing the field. So it's up to those players to try to change other players' minds. So I experiment with lists a little bit here and there, but I don't, there's no like Kador lists out there really. So, what do you guys think in your respective factions? Tom?
Tom? Go ahead and skip me for a second. I'm still formulating your response.
Okay. Well, since I play minions and gators specifically, I do follow certain people that play minions in tournaments, which are just a few, and the list they're all pretty similar, and I kind of agree with the way they play everything, so I don't have a whole lot to offer to this conversation, but I do. I look at their list, and then I play them, and I understand why two Gatorman posse are better than three in most situations.
Okay, but if a minion player changes their list around some, do you just kind of follow suit and change as well, or do you try to find a different nuance in your list?
I usually look at it, and I try to figure out why they brought, usually it's different beasts with a minion, and I try to figure out why, and I think it's usually because the minions are trying to metagame what they expect to see, and with their limited options, that's really all they can do is just change a couple beasts around. So I will experiment with different beasts, and
I think a lot of people, if they look at on the forums and they say, okay, well, this person is doing incredibly well with this list, I must play this list and I'll do incredibly well, that won't necessarily work for them because everyone's play style is different. I wouldn't say, I say conservatively aggressive. I wait for that chance to jump out and then take out key things and then move back, whereas the person who made the list might be incredibly conservative and have to absolutely wait to scalpel out something important. And that's, I think, the leads to some frustration with people and leads to the faction hopping, is they say, well, this person won the Masters tournament, how come I can't win with this list at all? Well, A, it's not knowing the list as well as they do, and B, it's they play completely different than you do. So it's you have to figure out what plays right for you.
Right. I seem to see that in this game a lot. Magic doesn't really have that problem, because, you know, no matter what you play with Magic, it's going to work exactly the same way. I mean, pretty much it is. But in this game, it depends a lot on, like, a player's skill of knowing distances and things like that, and knowing your opponent's stuff as well. So,
definitely.
So as you say, that not every player can take, you know, a Flanzer list or a JVM list or a Keith list and do as well as they can, because it's just not right for them. Which is another reason why it's causing, you know, why I think it's causing list stagnation, because those players could be really, really good players if they could find their niche, but they refuse to find their niche.
Yeah, I mean, I started out playing Retribution, then I switched over to Minoff, and I'm having to completely relearn how to play the game competitively, because the two lists, it's just completely different from each other, and I can't, even though I've found some good lists that people play and they say, oh, this is a great caster, well, you know, Pete Krios doesn't work for me because it's not how I play the game.
Yeah, and you just have to be comfortable with your faction, because, like, that's when I moved over to Trolls, that's what I played. I was playing those straightforward cookie-cutter lists, and it took me quite a while to get comfortable to start deviating from the norm and finding my own little playstyle. And then you just finally start realizing that, you know, just because this model's not played like this doesn't mean that it's good and it's not competitive. It just doesn't work in that current meta, you know. But I've had an incredible amount of success with the Mountain King. When I put him in the Epic Doomshaper list, I mean, he was absolutely wonderful. It's just, he has so many bad matchups. But yeah, I mean, it just takes you getting really comfortable and knowing exactly what your models can do, what your caster can do, before you can start getting a little creative and throwing things in there that you normally wouldn't see. You know, just kind of switching it up. But, I mean, I have played Runes of War, and that's one of my more favorite lists of trolls. But, you know, most troll tournament players, you're gonna see Runes of War, Family Reunion, and you're gonna see Prime Grim and Calandria. Those are the top four lists.
Ugh, fuck Calandria.
What's that?
Fuck Calandria.
Yeah, and you know, Prime Grim and Calandria are played very, very similar. Calandria's got a ranged heavy battle group. It's going to be Bomber, Impaler. There might be a heavy beatstick in there. Probably not, because she's probably going to go Burrowers and either Creole Warriors or Finblades. Probably Finblades, because she's using so much Fury that you really can't support the Creole Stone. So they're doing, like, a really, you know, really, really ranged heavy. And the same way with Prime Grim, you're going to see Bomber, Impaler, War Wagon, Burrowers, stuff like that. And even with Egrim, he plays a lot different than P. He's not about denial. He's more about waiting for that opportune moment to pull the trigger on the caster with his feet. And it makes an insane assassination threat. But he has virtually the same list as P. Grim, but people are starting to bring Scattergunners with him now. And now that Egrim came out and people started using Scattergunners with him, Scattergunners are starting to trickle down in other people's lists. Now you'll see Scattergunners with Epic Magic, and you'll see Scattergunners with Prime and Calandra. And people are starting to realize that, holy shit, like, a max unit of Scattergunners under Calandra's feet turn against Crix is, like, fucking amazing. It is ridiculous what how much work they can do. Yeah, I've lost my train of thought now.
Yeah, so I know that different casters seems to break open old units and stuff like that and allow them to be used effectively and stuff like that. But should an old unit be updated with like a UA? Because that's what made skinwalkers good again.
Yeah, I really think that if the bushwhackers got a UA, you would start seeing them more. It's just like the House Guard riflemen and the House Guard Thane. They weren't played that much, but now they got this awesome thing to see through camouflage and stealth that answers such a huge problem for Rhett now that they have this, they're starting to get rounded out, and I can't wait to see what Assyria does, but that's another topic.
All
it takes is this one little model to make something else just amazing. I mean, Skinwalker Alpha made the Skinwalkers so good, and it was just Rapid Strike. That was it. Blood Drinker, whatever. But just one little Rapid Strike just made them just head and shoulders so good. I mean, if like Bushwhackers got something like Hunter or Prey, I mean, they would be played quite a bit. And they would be very scary with an epic grim list with prey, mortality, and marked target. That's and a big combined ranged attack. That's scary little fuckers.
I do think we'll see a shift in meta once Steamroller 2014 comes out. It's just seemed like this year's been rather stagnant in the meta. Like everybody's pretty much just played the same stuff this year. It seems very samey.
Well, that tends to happen at the end of every Steamroller kind of session. Is everyone has been playing for a year, and that's what works for that Steamroller, so everyone plays that. And
then they perfect the list.
Yeah, it takes the next season to kind of shake things up a little bit, and I feel like that's normal. That's going to happen with no matter what kind of game comes out there. You play League of Legends, Dota, any game across any console or tabletop or whatever, there's always going to be some stagnation before the next big shakeup.
And on a different note, to say people that are getting upset with Privateer Press for whatever reason, at least it's not 40k, and to be competitive, you don't have to buy a whole new army every 6 months.
That's true. Yeah, I'm not really upset with Privateer Press. I'm really kind of upset with just players that whine about big lists, and then they can't change their lists to combat the lists there. Because they refuse to innovate because they just want to play what works too.
Yeah, what I've done, there's one guy here who went out in Oklahoma that went, I think, I don't know how he did it this most recent big con, but it was in the Masters tournament. I think he went like 3-2 or something like that. He almost went to the finals table. And I told him, I was like, hey, let's play a game. And he said, what should I bring? And I said, your best list. And we played 4 games that night, and I kept just playing him over and over and over again, so I could learn how he plays and learn how to beat him. So people that complain, oh, I can't beat trolls, or oh, I can't beat Menoth, you just haven't played enough Menoth or troll players to figure out how they work, and you haven't gotten good enough yet.
It's true.
Just put in the time, rolling the dice, and moving those little pieces of plastic around, and you'll figure it out eventually.
Yeah, innovate your lists, play some games, get used to certain things, because trolls is a very meta-shifting kind of thing. Being able to be dosed out by trolls really sucks, and it's something you have to be kind of ready for. I feel the same way about Legion, you know. And when you see 2 Ravagors sitting behind a forest that you can't target, it really sucks, but you have to be ready for something like that.
Yeah, out of most tournament lists, when you go to big things, people tend to build towards cricks and trolls. And then they have their all-comer lists and stuff like that. But, when I was playing Signar, I mean, thank God, there was only one other troll player. Because when I was playing Signar, I played Wayne one time with P. Haley, popped feet, had everything in range, and just went to town on his list. and it was like a fucking pea shooter. Like, I couldn't, it was ridiculous. It was scary. And, mold just kept coming closer and closer, and I just couldn't stop them. But, yeah,
I believe that topic's dead now, I believe.
Yeah.
That has been thoroughly explored for
yeah,
time.
Very well explored. So, how about we talk some painting, guys? Anything been on your tables?
Nope.
Nope.
Actually, when I sold all my Blood Angels and I said F you to GW and I'd never buy anything from you again, they came out with those 5 new painting things.
The texture paints? They're so good!
I love them. I bought 4 of the mud ones because I'm planning on doing desert type thing for my basing for my Menoth. And it's just so good, and the blood one is amazing. It makes blood effects easy. I'm doing my Menoth now, like they've been out in the field for a couple of years, and they haven't been in for a resupply, so they're all kind of bent up and rusted and beat to shit and dried blood and all that on them, and I'm so happy they came out with that, because it really does make painting blood and rust so easy.
Yeah, it's really solid.
I picked up all those, too. They're fucking amazing. I've been painting Epic Grim up right now. Can't wait to start playing him again. But yeah, I'm trying to experiment with layering and highlighting and all that good stuff, and put some blood on I think it's Crump's little bear trap. I think that's his name. But yeah, I'm gonna green stuff some little fleshy bits and some blood on that bear trap.
Nice.
That's going to be pretty cool. Pretty cool.
So, I am about ready. I've about decided that I'm going to dive into this RC top paint called Spastix Paints. They do color changes, color change what? Paints. Yeah. They do multi-stage color change paints. And I want to try it on a Warjack.
Your Warjacks are going to be fucking ghetto fabulous.
They're going to be amazing. I want to make a lowrider army is what I want to do.
Ghetto. That's going to be ghetto. Might as well put it on 22s.
That's what I'm going to do, man. But they have really, really neat metallics and stuff like that. It looks like car metallics. And I like that look a lot. And I want to see it on maybe... I actually think of putting it on my galleon. That's what I'm thinking of. To make it look like a marine boat. Like, you know how they have that, you know, stuff like that?
I actually know the paint you're talking about, and I saw a picture someone posted on the forums for his Convergence Cirrus army. They're all bright yellow, and they're very metallic looking, but not that obnoxious metallic that you get with the paints that we use. And right. It looked like a true... painted piece of metal. I don't know how it ended up that way, but it actually, the effect is very nice.
Yeah, it's a very nice effect, and from back in my model car days, I've used multi-stage color changes before, and I kind of want to get back into it, but using an airbrush this time instead of a can system, because you're hitting such a wide area, you just use a can back and you do model cars, but hitting a multi-stage paint on a small surface will be quite a challenge. And I can't really wait to try something like that. They also have a paint called True Chrome. So
that would be cool.
Yeah, if you're into just a completely chromed surface, you can do that. You can also add paint to the True Chrome to make a mirror finish out of a color.
Oh wow! Could you possibly link that somewhere? Because that would be very
absolutely,
fun to play with.
I absolutely will. I'll link it both in our chat and in the show notes.
Very cool. Yeah, you can have a lot of fun with that, having, like, a super polished something.
Yeah. So that's something I want to try to play around with. they also have pearlescent solids. They also have really good candies, from what I understand, which is something I would suggest any airbrusher to get into. Candy paints are amazing. Try them. They're, like, $8 a bottle, though. They're a little expensive. But you do get 3.5 ounces of paint, which is a lot of paint. So,
Try them. Oh, wow, that candy is really interesting looking.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to make an actual metallic-looking Borjak, then that's probably the way to go, honestly.
Yeah. It's very, very interesting. Yeah, but I'll link that in the show notes for you guys. So, I've been thinking of playing around with some, not very used tier lists to just to see how they work. Mostly Vlad II's Iron Fang tier list. The list is, really, really odd. It's two units of Iron Fang Ulans, a unit of, Black Dragon IFD, Kovnik Markov, the Great Bears, Drago, and, a War Dog.
And that's a really odd list.
It's a very odd list. But that's his tier list, and, Vlad II.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like it could be fun to play, at least.
It does. The benefits are your Great Bears become advanced deploy.
Okay.
You get, a 2-inch extension on your deployment zone.
Oh!
Yeah, you get, let's see, all of your spells, all your upkeep spells go out for free.
Oh, girl, keep talking.
Wow.
Really good. And your Ulans cost 1 point less per unit.
Oh, shit, girl.
Yeah, so it's a good tier list. It's very interesting. So I'm thinking of playing that.
Yeah, that could be another interesting thing, too, with the campaign is, you know, get extra points for playing tier lists. Because, I mean, honestly, everyone's tier list kind of sucks, except unless you're a couple factions.
Yeah, some of them are very...
It'll be a lot of fun, though, as far as fluff-wise.
That doesn't count.
RBT Tier 4 is a pretty fucking solid list. It needs 5-point Crusaders and all the support you need. I mean, ugh. Yeah.
And I'm just going to sit behind this wall the whole game?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a nice.
Well, that's at Tier 4, though. I mean, you could have a lot of fun with that campaign, forcing tier lists for a week or something like that, and at 35 points. It's like, time to get creative.
It's true.
Dead air.
Let's see. Now, there's a few other things in that tier list here. Actually, hold on. It's, Pikeman. Let's see here. I got 9 points to spare, actually. Let's see. Here's what I got so far. I got Vladimir Tispezi 2, so Vlad 2, Drago, a War Dog, Great Bears of Gallowswood, Iron Fang Pikeman, Black Dragon Officer, Iron Fang Kovnik, 2 units of Ulans, Widowmakers, and Kovnik Markov, and I have 9 points to spare.
Damn.
What else can you have in the list?
Wait a minute. Hold on. I have 1 point to spare. Never mind.
Oh,
fail.
The Ulans were min units. Womp, womp. So,
what are you doing? Fucking Lee over here.
I moved them to fulls. So 1 point to spare, there's nothing to go. So yeah, that was the whole list. Never mind.
So I'm looking at blatantly ripping off some other people's hard work for campaigns. And one interesting thing is UAs that survive, basically you roll against them, plus one if your side won, plus one for each challenge they won, plus one for every banner they captured, which you can change that. But then your UA can actually get some interesting abilities, like expertise. Add plus one to either weapon skill or ballistic skill, which could be defense or armor or something like that, or lucky, you know, maybe roll 1d6 per turn, just stuff like that. You can make things really interesting, so your UAs become more interesting and more important to the game.
Hmm. That seems kind of interesting. Yeah. Hmm. Alright. I think our list discussion is dead unless anybody else wants to talk about some lists.
I've been playing nothing but Harvey so I can figure out how to play this bitch.
She's
good, but she's so hard to play for me. So I'm used to Retribution where it's just a completely different playstyle, so I'm like, should I feat? Should I not feat? Well, I feat, and then the other guy's like, well, I do nothing. I'm like, well, damn it.
Yeah. A lot of people pop that Harbinger feat turn one. Really, you should hold it till turn two. Because they're only going to be able to get a certain amount of things, and scoring starts on turn two, you're only going to be able to get a certain amount of things on that scenario, so you pretty much guarantee yourself an alpha charge twice to clear that scenario and dominate.
Although I have waited until turn three once, and that worked out really, really well for me, because I was playing really, really conservatively, deployed relatively far back, and he was just running his shit across the board, trying to get to objectives, and I was like, alright, feet turn. I'm coming at you, bro. Can't do anything about it.
The longer you hold her feet, the more powerful it generally gets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Alright.
But so we should definitely rough up some rules for this campaign.
For the campaign.
I'm interested now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely for the campaign. So, what all have we been doing this week, non-hobby related there, Tom?
I've been playing a shit ton of Dota, and I've been abandoning people's existence, and I'm playing with a Broodmother. So, people have been hating me. I've made the game not fun for many, many people.
Great, dream crusher.
Exactly. Because some people have crushed my dreams, and I'm just like, you know what? It's my turn.
Right there. Alex, what have you been doing?
I got to play a pretty sweet game this week called Dungeon Dice.
I love Dungeon Dice! Oh my god!
And, yeah, we played it for like 4 or 5 hours straight. On Tuesday, because it's so much fun, so simple, easy to get into. It doesn't take a lot of time to play a game, which is sometimes why I don't necessarily play a war game, because I have a pretty busy schedule. And it's like, well, don't really have 2 hours, but Dungeon Dice, that takes like 15 minutes. F yeah, let's do that.
And then like 6 games later, you're like, oh, I'm late.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, well, fuck that, I just want to keep playing Dungeon Dice, forget my responsibilities.
It is so...
Oh
okay. Mike, what have you done? What have you done this week?
It's been dating some girls.
Oh, we went to that show too, Mike.
Oh, yeah, we went to August Burns Red show, and that was fucking phenomenal.
Such a good show.
Oh, God, they're so good live.
The encore might have been my best, or my favorite part.
Yeah, they played Composure as their last song, and everyone got a little fucking crazy.
Yeah, but before they played Composure, when they came out for their encore, they said, Merry Christmas, Asheville. And then they played Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah, no, there was a dude in a Santa Claus outfit crowd surfing. That was great.
I thought they played Frosty the Snowman.
Or was it
Frosty? Yeah, it was Frosty.
Yeah, it was Frosty.
Snowman.
Yeah. I wasn't even fucking there. Except you came back home and started playing Frosty the Snowman, and Simon was very confused about that song, and I was like, man, it's Frosty the goddamn Snowman. How do you not know that song?
They all hated it, and I was like, no, it's great. It's a great song, especially when it's fun.
Yeah.
No, it's because you live in a house of trolls. That's the problem.
That's the truest statement that's ever been spoken.
It gets bad when I get there.
It does. Oh. It always gets worse.
I'm king of motherfucker.
Okay, so this week has been pretty awesome. I've been playing my Xbox One a lot. My wonderful wife bought me Dead Rising 3, and it has been very fun having a good time with Dead Rising 3. Also, I've had a lot of card problems with my frickin' debit card this week.
Did you shop at or did you buy food from Bojangles?
So apparently my card's on like super secret probation or some shit. So I bought a fucking candy bar at Walmart, right? I was like, yeah, give me that Snickers bar. And then I came back at lunch and I tried to buy my lunch and it declined my card. And I was like, the fuck is this? So I called the card company the next morning and they're like, sir, did you buy a candy bar at Walmart at this time? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh, okay. Well, you just have a lot of suspicious activity on your card and we just, like, because of this candy bar.
Like, now I'm just a plus-size man.
Like, what? You see, like, all the purchases are in Asheville and in Waynesville, and no.
Yeah. You need the candy bar. To be fair, though, I had someone rip off my debit card by buying a test purchase thing. So,
oh yeah,
they're looking out for you.
Well, what had happened was apparently our Bojangles here in Canton has been, like, stealing people's card numbers.
like a worker has like a little card reader, and she's been swiping it through her card reader and selling those card numbers online.
That happened to me in Miami. I got stranded in Miami for 3 days because of that.
Ugh.
I actually got a letter from my bank this week telling me I need to cancel all of my credit cards because of that.
Yep.
It's because I had shopped there this year. Or bought food there this year.
Shopping at Bojangles?
I shopped for fried chicken, sir.
yes. May I see your selection of fried chicken, please?
I'm somewhat of a connoisseur.
So I shopped for fried chicken all week last week. Every day.
Yes, you did.
I ate fried chicken. So I ate fried chicken Monday, right? And I was like, this is good fried chicken. Then I ate Rockies Tuesday. Then the next day, I ate KFC. I ate fried chicken all week long. It's been pretty awesome. My heart does not agree, but... it is.
Tight like a tiger. Mm.
It is. Just fried chicken all that time.
Yep.
Mmm.
You're like the healthiest person out of all of us, too.
Whatever. And I'm 300 pounds of raw squish. That's what
You're
I am.
300 pounds of raw man.
Yeah, that's true.
I got pure, beard. Uncut man. I just want to snort you.
I work on an engine block while fucking a chick in the ass while drinking
eating
drinking motor oil,
chicken leg.
Dipping fried chicken in the motor oil.
That's right.
Well, that's shotgunning right. Budweiser Tallboys.
and of course I got a tattoo that says "Mom" with a heart around it.
Yeah,
that's straight up right there. That's manly.
How you know you're legit?
So guys, I think that's a wrap.
Oh shit! The fuck's that?
Dude. Thanks. Whoa. Thanks for Thanks for tuning in to episode 15, and we'll see you next week.
Whoop, whoop.